Welcome to For the Record, an unfiltered view on current trends and timeless advice for surviving in the aesthetics industry. Whether you're an injector, practice owner, sales rep, or marketer, it's time to set the record straight. Each week, we cut through the chaos and showcase diverse perspectives and winning ideas from the best minds in the industry. I'm your host, Dr. Tiffany Hall, Chief Growth Officer at Aesthetic Record. Now, let's get started on this week's episode.
Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of For the Record. And today we have a doubleheader with two guests who are the world's perhaps foremost experts on exosomes. We have with us two Mayo Clinic physicians, Dr. Serenya Wiles and Dr. Ada Bafar. They're both part of the Rion Aesthetics Group as far as research and development of the exosome product. Dr. Wiles is an associate dermatology professor at Mayo Clinic, and she's also the program director of clinical regenerative medicine education at Mayo Clinic. And she was the principal investigator on the plated studies and has continued to do more and more research now ongoing with plated and with Rion to find out more ways to use exosomes. We also have with us today Dr. Ada Bafar, who was the founder of Rion, the co-founder. He started researching exosomes in 2009, and then 2016 and 2017, really figured it out, found the needle in the haystack, if you will, and found a way to make this exosome product come to life and commercialize it within the Rion family. And now you see it on our shelves, obviously with plated, but he's also doing more research around cardiovascular uses for exosomes, wound healing, and has some really good insights on what's to come in our industry, particularly for exosomes in the next 2, 3, 5, 10 years. That's going to revolutionize what we do here in aesthetics. So Dr. Wiles, Dr. Bafar, welcome to our show.
Thank you, Tiffany. It's great to be here.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Well, I think it's unique that you're both a professor of dermatology, so you're doing dermatology all day long, but also the research end of it. You're heavily involved in research, and so seeing it from both the structured study side, where everything goes perfectly, or we hope it does, to now a patient walks in the clinic and she says, "I have this concern or this issue. Can you help me solve it?" I think your perspective is so unique in that you're doing both, and I want to really dive into that today. But I want to kind of start with your background in general, because I heard a podcast where you were starting out maybe in cardiology. You changed your focus at some point. So give us just an idea of how you got here in this particular niche, if you will, both in dermatology and in skin health.
Absolutely. So my dad actually played a big role in how I grew up. He's a pathologist, cardiac pathologist to be specific. And so growing up, I was very familiar with all the language of wound healing, heart regeneration, trying to understand how the body works. I was really fascinated. And then when I went to Mayo Clinic, I actually went there to work with a cardiologist who has a prominent lab studying cardiac regeneration. The heart's quite fascinating. It regenerates at a rate of 1% per year. So by the time you're 50 years old, half of your heart has regenerated. So it has this natural capacity to rebuild. So I started in a lab there. Fortuitously, it's Dr. Andre Terzic and Dr. Ada Bafar, who were the founders of Rion. But during that time, I realized the potential that regenerative medicine could have in dermatology, a specialty where a lot more research is needed. You know, it's a specialty where people do tend to have more private practices and be more practical in their approach and employing clinical trials. But I think there's a lot that we could understand through the lens of regenerative medicine. So that's where I had a shift in heart, shift in mind, if you will, from going from cardiology into dermatology. And I don't regret that decision at all. It's a great field, great variety of patients. It's patient impact is huge of what you can do to somebody's confidence level and their self-esteem by focusing on their skin. So I've loved my practice and I love my research just as much.
Well, I think you took a stop over at Harvard at some point, I read as well. So you've done some research with Harvard. You know, that's a name that everyone knows, as well as Mayo Clinic too. You've had some big impact and high impact things that you've done. And I think for us in this industry specifically, the whole regenerative functional medicine side is really taking a big front seat. You know, it's a much bigger industry than, let's say, aesthetics and cosmetics. And so we're seeing it really spill over. It's becoming a really hot topic. But so much of it's misunderstood. It's sort of it's like vaporware. It's a gray space. We don't know enough about it. We know about injecting and we know about, you know, the dermis and those kinds of things. But obviously we're looking at fat pads and you know, different spaces and things in the face. This is a whole different animal. And so I want to really focus on today, taking our audience through water exosomes. What does that mean? You know, someone comes in the office and they ask about it. They want to sell it to you as a practice owner. What are you looking for? And so I want to dive into that first. So let's just start with that. I think there is some misunderstanding. So can you give us like a layman's version? Because again, I am not a scientist like you are. I'm a different kind of scientist. A layman's version of what are exosomes and how does that sort of differ from what we might know now that they are, or even like from stem cells or from other kinds of like growth factors and things?
Thanks, Tiffany. Yeah, so I think the exosome word has gained so much popularity. I mean, you can look at products from different industries, companies, to even Barberstrom, I believe, has a lab-based exosome product. So the whole community of regenerative aesthetics has really evolved, and there's so much product to choose from. So taking a step back and just defining what are exosomes. So these are particles that are released from cells. So this is how cells talk to each other. So if we were to think about it in a very simplistic way, they're letters, they're gifts, they're messages, they're kind of like a word contained within an envelope that is shared between cells. That's how cells talk to each other. So they can say anything in the letter. It can be things like repair or regenerate, which are good messages, or it can actually be other harmful messages like inflame or metastasize. So really, the context is important. The source where they're coming from is important. There's really great source variability too. So if in a very simplistic way, these are just protected messages, typically thought as ways that cells communicate with each other. And so finding the right message is really key here. So coming back to the source of exosomes, how it's made, where it's coming from, those are the questions that we need to be asking to be able to better understand the potential of its technology.
Yeah, I want to make sure that I put a note in here for the audience that this is not a sponsored podcast by Rion. I just am very curious about exosomes, and Dr. Wiles is here speaking on her own behalf and not on behalf of Mayo Clinic. So these are her views, her ideas, as well as mine. So if we veer off a label or off a study, don't penalize us for it. We're just going to talk about the real deal here. But you mentioned that it's, you know, the carrier of the message, I think, is a really cool idea. And we think about, you know, metastasizing or things, you know, degrading and dying over time. This idea of, you know, the cellular degradation of our faces and of our skin happening. That happens to all of us, as we know, much different than maybe even cardiology. We're all going to see a dermatologist at some point in our life, right? We're going to go to the derm at some point and have our skin, our wrinkles, something to look at. Maybe not the cardiologist as much, but within that, give us an idea of like our, you know, like our skin age, like what we look like, you know, from a skin age perspective versus our actual age. Because, you know, we do those Vizia things like, oh my gosh, like I'm 75 and I'm 55. You know, how does that differ and what role do exosomes play in that difference of aging?
Absolutely. And I recently heard my friend Doris Day talk about the context of us having two birthdays. And I love that because that's essentially what's happening is we have our chronological age and then we have our molecular age. So we have our biological clock and the chronological clock. So you can be 30 years old or 40 years old, but your skin could either be younger, like 20-year-old skin based on genetics, like your biological molecular clock, or it can be older, like a 50-year-old skin if you've spent a lot of time outdoors, you've had harsh environmental exposures or topical exposures. So really that in that context, I always talk to my patients about improving skin health. So what can we do wherever you are, you're coming in with these two birthdays, how do we synchronize them or even skew it so that we can reverse or kind of control the biological clock to be in your favor, where we can boost collagen production, where we can help elastin structure stay around longer. So this is how we can kind of think about these different tools. So we have in our toolkit vitamin C, we have retin A. These are tried and true. They've been around for a long time. One acts as a cofactor for collagen synthesis, helps with something called oxidative stress reduction, which basically reduces inflammation in the skin. And then the other one also helps produce collagen. But really a new category that has disrupted the traditional way of thinking about skin health is regeneration. So regenerate. And this is where I bring in the concept of peptides, growth factors, PRP, PRF, exosomes, everything that we're talking about in the show here. It's all within this regenerate category. And I almost take it up to my number one before bringing in the others. And then, of course, I talk about sunscreen as a dermatologist because you have to protect your investments. But essentially, this regenerate category has introduced us to these new tools. And I think it allows us to use them in a creative way to optimize skin health and to optimize our two birthdays, if you will.
Well, and you mentioned some hot button words there, stem cells being a big one right now, and obviously PRF, PRP. And so as we think about, I think the word for that, by the way, is it cellular senescence? Did I say that correctly? I think that's the word that we use in the medical sphere about that. And I was reading a little bit last night about, you know, it's good in some ways, but then if it gets a little overkill, it's bad long term. So you've got to kind of mitigate that. And I think we've looked at long, you know, in historical measures, stem cells being a big option is, again, PRP, PRF. But what is the difference if we're looking at this from a practice owner buying something in a stem cell versus an exosome? Because I think that's where the wheels kind of fall off. People get very confused. So give us an idea of just what the two differences are.
Absolutely. So stem cells are building blocks. Stem cells are cells that can be found in culture. They're alive. They're kind of growing in the lab. They're able to divide and replicate. So a stem cell, true definition, is that it can self-renew and it can differentiate, meaning it can become lots of different types of cells. So you really want to be careful here, because a stem cell also has the potential to become different types of cancerous cells, right? So in the right context, it can be helpful for regeneration, but in the wrong context, it can really contribute to some harm. There's also different types of stem cells. So we teach a course here at Mayo Clinic for medical students and graduate students. And at the end of the course, I always tell them, if somebody talks to you about stem cells, your next question should be, well, which type do you mean? Same thing with exosomes. If they use the word exosomes, well, what do you mean? Which type do you mean? You know, this is just like saying, you know, like pasta. You can just say it's just a generic word, but you can have tagliatelle, you can have spaghetti, bolognese. So there's so many different varieties, and each one is used as a different ingredient, different purpose. So coming back to it, the concept of stem cells, these are used mostly in the lab. They're used in clinical trials for injectables. And these are in the context of shelf stable, off the shelf stem cell products. There are none. You know, stem cells need a viable culture. They need to be in the lab at a certain temperature. They need to be at a 37 degree incubator. So there's a lot of these pretenses that's involved in delivery of stem cells. Just putting some stem cells on top of the skin is not going to affect skin rejuvenation or skin healing. It's not going to get delivered into the skin itself. So true stem cells currently are mesenchymal stem cells that have been used for clinical trials, but they are just used in clinical trials, not available off the shelf for our providers to use. So just be careful with the marketing of the word. And just a little plug for dispelling the myth around plant stem cells. So plant stem cells sometimes may even just come from the stem of the plant. So it could be misnomer, you know, marketing, if you will, of changing the context of where it's coming from. And there's even a whole a separate discussion we could have about how plant cells and mammalian cells can interact and if there's true benefit there. But just be cautious around some of the, you know, cosmetic marketing around what is off-the-shelf stem cell products that are available. In contrast to exosomes, I think there's a lot more availability or starting to show more availability from the off-the-shelf perspective.
I think that's a great point too, because stem cells, as far as I know in the U.S., you cannot use them unless you are in a clinical setting, a clinical trial setting. I have some friends who work in other countries who use them quite a bit. They do all kinds of different things there, but in the U.S., it's a no-go. So if you guys think that you're getting them, you probably are not getting them. But I do see it on people's websites and things, or talking about it on Instagram. Like that's not even plausible. But I think to your point, you know, we lump them all together. We hear about regenerative is like this big thing that's all one big vat full of, you know, growth kinds of things, and we don't really dispel or differentiate which one is which. And so thinking about exosomes in particular, you just mentioned it depends on like the source or what kind they are. And so I know that as you came off the plated study that you just finished, that's a platelet-derived exosome, which is different than what we might see with other companies. And so what is the significance of what kind of exosome it is, and you know, again, where it comes from or the source of it?
Great question. So this is where I think we can focus on two different pathways for exosomes. So one is coming from a cell-based source, like a mesenchymal stem cell. And then another one is coming from a blood-based source, like a platelet product. So with the cell-based source, like mesenchymal stem cells or fibroblasts or other cell lines, like we mentioned with stem cells, they need to be grown in the lab. So say that some companies advertise adipose mesenchymal stem cells, which comes from the fat. Some advertise umbilical cord mesenchymal stem cells. Some advertise placental, amniotic fluid, bone marrow drive. So there's a lot of different sources within that, right? So we have these little pockets of stem cells within our bodies that naturally regenerate, and we can isolate them. However, think about the source. So usually with a fat stem cell, mesenchymal stem cell, it's coming from one or two donors, or an umbilical cord blood stem cell that's coming from one donor, which is different from the placental stem cell, which is coming from another donor. So mother versus baby. So you can have lots of different sources. Then you have to take them to the lab and expand them or grow them. This is done over a period of weeks to months. And the media, or basically what the cells release, is collected, and the exosomes are isolated from that. So just to think through, well, why does that matter? You know, how does that vary if something is grown in the lab versus processed right away? Something's grown in the lab, we have this idea called phenotypic deviation. It changes, the product changes. Just this morning, we had a lot of news related to processed foods and processed different types of things that we're consuming that can be, you know, the idea of processing is a bad thing. Same concept here. This is sort of like a processed exosome, if you will. They take it into the lab, they culture it out over time, and then you collect the media, and then that becomes the exosome product. Usually coming from one, maybe two donors that has those cell lines have been established. In contrast, if you were to look at a blood-based product, and the reason why I kind of favor this idea of pooled sources, like pooled platelets, is because you get the source right away and you process this immediately. So, you know, say we have from 18 donors from FDA compliant sites, and these are pooled together, processed right away, then you have your exosomes by that day or the next day. So it's an immediate turnaround compared to a several weeks to several months turnaround. So this is where I think it kind of maintains the integrity, if you will, of the source that it came from versus a product like from a cell-based or a stem cell-based that may change with time when it's cultured outside the body.
Yeah, we talked to Dr. Wiles quite a bit about exosomes and what they are, what they do, the whole cell-to-cell communication thing. And so I want to kind of take a step back with you and go through where this even started, because I think you mentioned that 2016 and 2017, you started this company. You have a big knack for regenerative medicine. How did you even get here, and what kind of skills and things were you doing at Mayo Clinic that made you think, huh, I want to do this thing for aesthetics particularly?
So I think all of regenerative medicine really starts with stem cell research. And I think we really focused on the heart for obvious reasons for many, many years, looking at different types of stem cells that help the heart regenerate. One of the things that really fosters heart regeneration actually is very helpful for skin as well. There's a collection of signals that are needed for the heart to regenerate. But as it turns out, that same collection of signals is really important for any of your soft tissues to regenerate, whether it's your tendon, your cartilage, your bone, you know, your skeletal muscle, or your skin. And when we discovered that, we realized that, well, although we want to ultimately get to these vital organs, maybe it'd be a lot more straightforward to treat all the issues we have on our skin and then build sort of the repertoire of the technology so that ultimately we treat patients with, you know, organ issues.
Well, so in a lab at Mayo Clinic right now, and you're researching this, yeah. Walk me through how that works. I know a lot about FDA research and things on the, you know, the filler biosimulator side, but how do you even research this? How do you even find this and make these discoveries, like from a base level? How does that even happen?
So I think what we wanted to do was to understand, you know, first of all, what goes wrong when you don't heal your tissues, right? So if you look at a young person and they injure themselves playing sports or doing whatever, they bounce back really quickly, right? But as we age, we tend not to do that. Like if I take a fall, I'm not going to bounce back quickly at all. And so the question is, why is that? And as it turns out, there's a variety of things that we stop having as we age, that young kids have, that can be restored. You have it in your body, It's just that your tissues have less and less access to it. And then in things like aging, diabetes, or other chronic illnesses, you end up having no access to it. So you can never heal your wounds. You get very, thin, paper thin skin and, easy wounds, things like that. So what is that? So that's number one, microvascular content, blood vessels underneath the tissue. You need that to access the regenerative power of your body. And we lose that as we age. The other is the balance between healing and inflammation. As we age, we tend to inflame because we don't have this regenerative impulse in our tissues. One, we have older cells in our tissues, and two, we don't have that perfusion, that microvascular content. And that sort of snowballs into a whole host of other elements that lead to chronic injury and a lack of healing. Stem cells, as we thought early on, may serve as the building block to heal tissues, right? So you could put a stem cell in, it turns into a bunch of different types of cells. Maybe that's all you need as a surplus to heal. And what we discovered is that your tissue is full of stem cells. So if you take just a cubic centimeter of skin and look at it, you'll be able to get, easily culture out 1 billion stem cells from that. Right, mesenchymal stem cells. So you don't really need more stem cells. They're there. It just can't hear any message. Right. So as we started working on this problem of how do we solve tissue healing, we realized that we have a messaging problem, right? Sort of like the politicians. Like we just can't, the tissue just doesn't have the right information to do the right thing. And came in exosomes, right? What is the message? What's the words between cells? It's an exosome. And so then it was a challenge of sifting through the, hundreds of millions of types of exosomes in the body that govern everything to find the one or the collection of exosomes that really foster tissue healing. And that's really the work that took place probably between 2009 and 2015 in my lab, right? To figure out what is that message, what is that signal, and how is it encapsulated, what's the source? Turns out to be pretty simple. It's the platelets that produce that. Not all types of platelets, you have to put them in the right condition, but you can get them in abundance, and then that's the message that you can carry forward for healing.
It's magnificent. I mean, I don't know what other word to use to think about finding this needle in a haystack, if you will. I think about platelets because we've often heard, PRP and PRF, and I ask this about anyone who's into exosomes. Of we've been on this PRP wagon for a long time, and my body, as you mentioned, it's already degrading, right? I'm not healing myself. I'm not regenerating things on my own. That's why I'm here. That's why I'm asking for things like this. And so to use my own PRP or PRF to me seems counterintuitive because if it were working, it would already be working. So what's the argument for using something like an exosome in lieu of a PRP, PRF, these other treatments and things that we're using topically in our industry and aesthetics particularly, and using exosomes instead?
So I think, in our approach, especially as we're doing these different FDA trials to look at things like wound healing, what we're thinking about is why does this tissue not heal right? And what we want to do is provide it with the right cues to take it away from inflammation and chronic injury and towards, regeneration and wound healing pathway. To do that, you need to harness the power of the source of regeneration, right? Something that heals your tissues in the body. That exogenous source, in other words, I can't get my tissues fed this information, so I'm going to plop that information right on top of the tissue, seems to work quite well. Now, could we use your platelets to heal you or me? Absolutely. It's not so much that your platelets don't work or my platelets don't work because of aging. It's that if you need to take those platelets and put them into an environment where they sit there and shed the right information. You need to collect that exosomes. You need to characterize them as, are those the right ones? And we have a whole system that allows us to do that. And then once you've shown that you have exosomes, that they're the right type of exosomes, they create the right messages, and they do the things that you want them to do to heal, then you can package them as a drug. You've shown all of that to the FDA. You take that forward, and now you treat a particular condition, right? And so that's how you have the sort of product characterization at Foster's, you know, clinical trial application, and that lets us treat austere wounds that, you know, help heal tissues.
Well, what I think is fascinating about this is I work with a lot of companies who are, you know, preclinical stage. They're still in the research development phase, getting funding, and they do research. You mentioned it was, you know, it's 8 years, right? It takes a long time. And they never get to the commercialization part because it's hard to mass produce things that are so specific and unique and require so much harvesting and finding the, you know, the right quality, et cetera. I work with a company that does like fat off the shelf, same kind of thing. You go through tons of donors to get this little bitty amount of fat that you're going to use because it's just, it's hard. But thinking about the commercialization of this product, you know, as I look at like the shelf price that I'm paying as a patron coming into a medical spa and buying it off the shelf, a lot goes into that. So how does it get commercialized? How do you have like vendor or not vendors, but donors who come together and you harvest, you know, from multiple donors? Like how does it go from your research lab to my shelf at my local med spa? And obviously there's things I'm sure that are proprietary there, but just give us a high level.
Well, so I think, you know, one of the lucky or big discoveries that we had was really to source extracellular vesicles from platelets and not from other cell sources. We can get platelets in abundance. It's in all of our bodies in abundance. Fortunately, the FDA has set up a wonderful blood banking system in the United States. And there is a certain time period where the blood banks can use platelets, after which they can't be transfused anymore. So we're not taking anything away from, you know, the medical resource, right? That was something very important to us. So after that time's passed, we can take those platelets and now put them into the environment that we're interested in and collect the right information, these exosomes, out of them. But now you have a system that's massively scaled, right? So, you know, with cultured stem cells or other types of technologies that are, you know, sort of adherent cell based, it's really expensive to scale things up, like you're saying, right? And it's very cumbersome to be able to have enough stuff to even know how to characterize it or release it, right? And every time you do it, it's something new. And so you sort of spin your tires. Here, we were fortunate enough to be able to get this material in massive abundance, right? So we can actually create this at large, large scale. And because we can scale it so much, we can offer this to, you know, patients in need at a level that's pretty cost contained, right? I mean, if you were creating something that was extremely precious, and people like wouldn't be able to have access to it. But here, I think we can produce it at a scale that's much more cost contained, so it can help everyone.
Well, and the research is incredible. I mean, to see the before and after, as Dr. Wiles has mentioned, was on, you know, as a PI looking at the studies from, you know, the 6 week mark, how, I mean, a marked difference, obviously an appreciable difference. But thinking through that particularly, you know, the research goes on, right? You keep researching on and on and on. And this product is obviously plated, particularly we're talking about now, you know, the aesthetic indication, is obviously in store. You know, it's in med spas now, dermatology offices, you know, plastic surgery offices. It's going to continue to grow and change and develop. What are the things that come next for this? Because I think about this long term is, you know, do we have such a marked improvement that we can stop using certain products like a topical, you know, other topical creams and you know, devices and things, or even injectables that we can stop doing, you know, if we quit doing our Botox, like what can we actually foreseeably see coming down the pipeline for exosomes in the next, you know, 10 years?
So I think a few very exciting things are going to happen within the realm of extracellular vesicles and exosomes. Number one, so Right now, we use fillers, right, to eliminate wrinkles. But the fillers are just literally fillers, right? They just displace tissue and they plump up your skin. They don't really have any benefit. The ones that are more durable are good at forming scar, right? They form scar tissue under the skin. And that helps essentially create sort of like a pseudo collagen environment. It's collagenous, but it's a scar collagen that makes you look better. And it works. Like people do look better. I mean, looking at the data looks wonderful. But imagine if you could pair the filler with these regenerative products now, where they're biopotentiated to truly reverse the aging process. Under the hood, not topically, but as an injectable. So now you have fillers that are biopotentiated to truly reverse aging. So I think that's something that we're very excited about. You have to go through the FDA for that, but I think it's very worthwhile to pursue something like that. I think along with that, material science that's highly compatible with exosomes. Right, so that you can truly deliver a technology that gels in the right way under the skin and releases the exosomes in the right way. All of that's going to be brand new science. The other thing that I think is going to, in my mind, revolutionize the space is delivery. So, right now, you mentioned Botox. How do you get Botox? You get it through injections, right? And if you get enough Botox injections, you get fibrosis, right? And so it creates sort of peculiar features in the consumer's face. And I think in order for people to be able to benefit from technologies like Botox, delivery is a big issue. What's wonderful about extracellular vesicles is that they are extraordinarily good at delivering things. So we can, now that we know how to make these in large abundance, imagine we don't use them for their regenerative purpose, but we use them for their Botox delivery purpose, right? And maybe as a topical, again, has to go through the FDA, but as a topical, you get Botox, right? Topically applied. How would that look, right? And or maybe some variation thereof. So I think that's really where I'm seeing the field move is in those sort of spaces. The last one that I'll tell you is right now we're using for regenerative purposes, we're using naturally occurring exosomes that are fine. Like you said, it's a needle in a haystack. We were able to identify this particular one that honestly makes sense, right? You get a cut, what do you get? You get platelets in your wound, right? So it makes sense that those would be the first responder messages for healing. But imagine us identifying the few key signals in those exosomes, the words that they're actually saying to the different cells. And we get rid of all the noise because it is a naturally occurring substance. So it means there's going to be many words that it has. What if we get rid of the words we don't need and just have the right engineered words, right? So now it's a synthetic exosome that just says what you need. Can have much more potency. So I think those are the things that we have in our pipeline.
My brain just exploded. I mean, when this company goes to that next level, please call me. I would love to be part of this. I'm obsessed with this idea of like a couture filler, and couture in the sense that it is about my body and what I need and my response to it, and my particular indications that need to be corrected and such. This idea that you could have a filler that actually goes to work for you beyond just filling. Because I think that's why people love Sculptra, they love Radiesse, is because it's not just a filler, it's also doing work, right? As you mentioned, under the hood, behind the scenes, it's doing work for me. I feel like I'm getting like double the bang for my buck as an investment. But as you mentioned, it is a scar tissue. And I sold Sculptra for years, and I'm a huge advocate. You guys all know that. But there are issues when you go do a facelift and things. People have mentioned, concerns about that. And just the mechanism of action is a little bit misunderstood in many cases. But this seems like very, first of all, intriguing, like mind blowing, but also imagine our industry when this is when this is real, how much different things will be, the outcomes, things will, you know, it'd be so much different. I think at Botox as well, the amount of adverse events that we have with toxin because of misplacement, because we don't know what we're doing, we don't understand, you know, muscles and the movement of muscles and contiguous muscles and how they're, you know, they're going to respond, that we have a lot of people walking around with Spock brows and drooped eye, you know, eyebrows and all kinds of crazy things that happen because we don't know what to do with it. We don't know where to put it. We have, you know, obviously anatomy varies from person to person. I mean, this solves so many problems for us as an industry. It's just revolutionary, and it is coming. I think other countries are already doing injectable exosomes. I'm not sure it's the level or quality of what you're able to do, but they are doing it in other places. It's obviously not here yet in the FDA approval process, as we all know, takes very, very long. But I feel like this is, you know, when this happens, it's going to be a new day for aesthetics, and I think it opens up our category to a whole new set of people who have not been able to get injected before or haven't wanted to because of the fact that it was this synthetic filler. It's, you know, it's jelly in my face kind of idea. Now it's like actually going to work for you is a whole different animal. So this is crazy exciting. But what about even topically? Do you see things topically happening, you know, even with what's approved now and the usage that we have now, that we can be doing more with it or putting it with other things and stacking it with other technologies that we already have? Or ways to get more out of it with, you know, with today's approvals?
Yeah, I think you know, you heard about Dr. Wiles's work. I think her results and her data is suggesting a lot of very unique promise for the use of these types of products topically. I think one area that we're in particular interested in with Dr. Wiles is actually, you know, as a cardiologist, I always harass the dermatologists that anytime there's a skin problem, they just prescribe steroids, right? Topical steroids just nuke the immune system, right? So they wipe out whatever inflammation is there. But it's probably not, for chronic applications, probably not very good for you or your skin. It is anti-stem cell steroids and it is pro-aging. What if you could dial the thermostat of the immune system at the level of the skin, not so much either red hot or blue cold, but green somewhere in the middle, right? What if you could actually figure out how to create a healthy immune environment for the skin? I think that a lot of the topical work that we're now very interested in is to create that sort of like the very happy immune system within the skin. And I know that Dr. Wiles and a few other colleagues are looking also at the microbiome of the skin and can extracellular vesicles in altering immune health at the level of the skin also start to alter the microbiome of the skin to create a much more youthful, literally anti-senescence or anti-aging skin environment just with topical application. I think those are some of the things that we're now working towards, and that's probably we're going to probably see that sooner even than the injectable biopotentiated fillers. But I think all those types of technologies are just around the corner.
Well, just listening to that, thinking through, you know, the pathway that you prefer, the expense that must be involved in that to pull together donors to, you know, to harvest, you know, exosomes and to make them shelf ready and stable enough to be sold in a retail based product. Think about the cost of it. And I know that, you know, for instance, plated is a little bit more expensive than, you know, our average skincare brand. But if you think about what goes into that, it's apparent that it has to be more expensive because that's a significant amount of work on the back end. In your experience, and I'm sure the answer is going to be yes, but how do you see it working in clinical experience, you know, with your actual patients day to day? Is it worth the expense? And does it also help to boost other things they're using in their regimen today, whether it's a vitamin C, you know, retin A, whatever that may be? Does it make it work better, faster, stronger, more efficacious because they're using exosomes? So is it worth the investment to do it long term?
Yeah. So I think the answer to that question is looking at our skincare regimen today, we have a multi-step regimen, right? We have, some people have 10 steps, some people have 3, some people have more than that or somewhere in the middle. We are looking for the holy grail, right? Is there a holy grail that exists where only the one product can do everything, you know? And I think if we were to come close, it's probably within the field of regenerative medicine, especially with products like exosome technology that offer that, where they can do things like regenerate, rebuild, restore, rejuvenate, all of those working individually, like the study that we did with Plated. So Plated has three different products. They have an intense, daily, and a calm. The study that we did involved the Plated intense product, where it was applied twice daily topically to patients aged 40 to 80 years old. We had 56 patients in the study, follow them up to 6 months. Most of the time, the patients were enrolled either 6 weeks or 12 weeks. We've published this data, and what we found was that the product has a maximal effect. So you're seeing really great improvement in redness and pigmentation and wrinkling as early as 6 weeks. And then we also did biopsies to kind of see how it's working underneath the skin with collagen elastin production. So with a product like Plated, with that exosome technology, what we are seeing is that it can work to prime the skin. And this is how I'm using it in my practice, both as a primer. So say I'm doing a Fraxel or a CO2 laser, a microneedling, some type of procedures upcoming. So I say, let's optimize this. You know, currently we sometimes use hydroquinone, topical hydroquinone to prime the skin. But here I say, why don't we boost your collagen production initially to get the skins going and the fibroblasts starting to produce, and then we'll do the procedure. And it kind of enhances that a little bit more. It makes the cells ready so that you're getting the best benefit possible from that procedure. So I think from a price point perspective, it's really, in aesthetic patients are investing quite a bit in their care. And we're thinking about, series of treatments, series of procedures. We always think about, we'll do this in the spring, we'll do this in the summer, and do this in the fall, and, have a little regimen, a package bundle, whatever you want to call it, deal, right? How do we optimize that, though? How do we make sure that they're getting the bang for their buck, if you will, from each procedure is potentially priming their skin and getting them the best possible result from each of those procedures. There are also post-procedure products like Plated Calm that I think is a great adjuvant because it helps calm the skin and accelerate skin recovery so they can get back to their daily activities sooner. So essentially, it works by itself, as a study shown, what we've published. And then it also works in conjunction to prime skin for procedures, but also act as a booster post-procedure. So I think a lot of potential there from this technology.
And I'm glad you mentioned the post-procedure, because we hear about it most often now as a, in a sense, a wound healer. We're going to use it for microneedling. We're going to use it post-laser. And so people are thinking about it, almost niching it in a sense, or putting it specifically in that post-procedure arena. And I think what you mentioned about, let's prepare the skin in advance, let's get the patient ready for the procedure so that we have better results long-term, is really a concept that we're not actually applying very often in practices, because we think about the expense. But, look at retail sales in general. We have an EMR company here that we work with, and, we work with like 8,000 clinics, and I see them, retail sales are never a prominent part of their overall, bottom line. It's just not part of what they do all day long. They don't pitch it. They don't talk about it. It kind of gets forgotten about. But in this case, exosomes, they do, because it's part of the procedure package. But I think if we shift that to before the procedure ever happens, obviously we can have better results long term, exponentially, hopefully better results over the course of a year, 2 years, 3 years, getting that cellular age to match between what, our skin looks like and what our chronological age looks like. So I think there's a huge benefit. So those of you who are thinking about this in your practice, I think it's a phenomenal investment, because you could possibly clear out multiple skincare products that you are using in lieu of using this instead, but also from a procedure perspective, packaging it in, putting the cost of it along with what you're doing and building. We talk about Sculptra all the time, we talk about Radiesse all the time, these products that are biostimulators, but they're happening under the tissue, as we know. They're not happening on the skin surface, they're not happening with how we look. The glow is certainly, it's appreciable for many people when they have a Sculptra glow, but it's different than skincare. So I think if you're on the Sculptra wagon and the Radiesse wagon, you're not on this wagon, you're kind of missing the boat there. It's like you're going to the dentist but not brushing your teeth kind of thing. You got to do both. But as far as, when you see patients and you're working with them day to day, what is their feedback? I mean, do you see patients who come back in and say at week 8, week 10, oh my gosh, I'm noticing a difference? Because I feel like providers oftentimes, that's their test. Does it work or not? And is it appreciable enough at that point that they feel like, yep, good investment, I did it, I'm going to keep doing it, this is great for my practice long term?
Absolutely, yeah. So patients definitely notice a difference. The studies we found, the difference is appreciable at as early as 6 weeks. And I think to that Sculptra glow, there is a glow that's associated with this product as well. So patients often comment, my skin's been glowing, I really feel like I'm using a lot less moisturizer, there's a lot more radiance that's going on. So I think there's a lot that can be seen and appreciated by patients. And to your point with Sculptra, I love using Sculptra in my practice too. And I actually prime my patients with the plated product before I inject them with Sculptra. Because if you think about the mechanism of how Sculptra is working, we got to get the fibroblasts. It's the fibroblast-dependent mechanism that activates the polylactic acid to then produce new collagen, right? So if we're able to, again, this concept of senescence, able to potentially clear senescent fibroblasts so that the other fibroblasts, the healthier fibroblasts, are ready to go and produce collagen, prime the skin for healthy collagen. Then when you do deliver sculpt products like Sculptra or other biostimulators, you're really accelerating their potential, seeing results sooner than the 6 months or 3 months that you would.
Yeah, I think that's where the money meets the, what do they say, the rubber meets the road, whenever the patient can see it. Because obviously we see things in a much different way than patients do, right? When they look in the mirror at home, they see a different thing than we see. But I feel like with this big hot craze with Sculptra, with RayDS, with regenerative medicine, with biostimulators, if ever there was a time to actually get this in your practice, the time is today. Like, the time is right now to find a rep and get it in. But I think to that point, there are some things you should watch out for. There are some red flags. And I was talking to a colleague of mine who's friends with some of your leadership team over there. Well, not yours, but the Rion team. And they were talking about how, you know, how specific they have to be with what they harvest, what they use, that, you know, there's so much waste because it's not good enough for their product. It's not the right kind of exosome. It's not the right quality. And so there's a lot of, like, really deciding what's the best version of this. And so with that being said, a sales rep comes to my office and says, I have exosomes. What are the things that we should be asking to make sure that we have the right quality, we have the right source, the right ingredients, the right integrity, the right, you know, efficiency, effectiveness? I think you have a list of five, I've heard. What are your big five things that we have to know to ask our reps before we go ahead and write that check to buy our exosomes?
Yeah, great question. So here, you know, I always ask about the source. So I tend to be a have preference to platelets, you know, having it processed right away versus a stem cell-based source. You really want to ask about the production, because if you think about how the exosomes are made, this is not your standard Tylenol that you would go to Walgreens or CVS to get to guarantee every single pill is going to have the exact same ingredient, right? Because it can be processed and manufactured in so many different ways. So I think to ask your rep questions like, tell me about the batch consistency, meaning every single batch, are they getting the same number of exosomes in each batch? Or tell me about, you know, patient variability. So maybe from the first three batches, the first order that you're getting is from patient one who donated their adipose mesenchymal stem cells. But then for the newer batches, it's patient two. Ask about their age. You know, how old are these patients that you're getting the products from? Ask if it's single donor, if it's from one donor, or if it's from pooled donor, so multiple donors coming together. Pooled donor has the advantage of, you know, averaging out any of the anomalies so that you're really getting the best potential. So these are some important things to think through about how much. You don't have to be fixated on how much exosomes specifically, but rather the consistency. You know, are you able to reproduce the same number every single time, so you know when you're getting the products in your practice, you can kind of expect the same results every time that you were to give it to your patients. And then I also talk about looking at the efficacy of the product, which is sort of how does it work? What's the effect? A lot of companies will kind of share results as a combination with procedures. You know, they'll say, look at our RF microneedling plus exosome delivery. And you're amazed with the results, but how much of that is from the RF microneedling versus the exosome alone? So, you know, asking for the product affect individually, independently is important to know as well. And so those are kind of the things that I would start with. And certainly asking about FDA clinical trials. You know, if does the company have trials that are ongoing? And some companies will say, you know, we're FDA regulated, we're FDA, you know, but currently there are no FDA approved products that are out there in the market. So for intact skin within the cosmetic division, it's viewed a little bit differently, but you really want to ask about these IND studies. For instance, with Rion, they have multiple IND studies, and we're actually in the process of applying for two additional IND studies from dermatology, looking at new indications. So we've started the conversation with the FDA, but it's actually moving into phase two clinical trials as well. So I don't think there are other companies that are that have made this type of progress. And if there are, that's wonderful, because we want healthy, good competition. And but you want to ask for those types of questions of, you know, tell me about your clinical studies that are going on, and tell me about some of these other questions related to sourcing, batch consistency, effect individually. All of those will help you make the right decision.
You know, as I look at this and think about companies who are coming in selling this, what you mentioned about the FDA being involved, we hear this in skincare all the time, where companies have, you know, great skincare, but it's like off-the-shelf skincare that, you know, sort of a retail-based product, right? Mm-hmm. You start bringing out clinical trials, true clinical data, FDA study sites who are doing it with true PIs who've been doing this for a long time and understand the way that, you know, a study should work. It's just a different level of rigor. It's a different level of expertise for one, but also a higher bar to cross to say that this is effective and this is efficacious for, you know, at your point, reachable at 6 weeks, a huge, huge part of it. So if you're looking at exosomes in your clinic and you're wondering about what should I be purchasing, ask for the studies. Like, I can't compel you enough to ask to see the science. And I think what you mentioned about when it's being paired with something else, is it that, you know, is it causation, correlation? We don't really know mm-hmm. the answer unless we see it on its own. So I think there's just some really key things to know there for sure. And as you look at, you know, sort of the re-on line of things, they are also using the same exosomes in other industries, if I'm not mistaken, like in pet health and different, we know mm-hmm. they work and elsewhere. You know, this is not brand new, like today's science. This has been going on for a long time. So where else would we see, like in our common life, exosomes being used in other medicine specialties around, you know, whether veterinary or just, you know, regular human medicine, if you will?
Yeah, so veterinary science is huge. You know, we have equine studies looking at horses and how we can improve their horse health and their agility. And, you know, look, and alluding to that, it's within this field of orthopedics. So within joint bone health, joint health, we know that this product really started off within the cardiac space. So it was initially intended for heart failure patients, and currently there are trials ongoing for heart failure. It's expanded to wound healing, where we're looking at actually post-grafting, post-skin grafts, and how well those wounds heal with the application of these exosome products. Another area that we're especially excited to study is atopic dermatitis or eczema. So there is an IND that we're putting together to look at that specific indication and see how the product will have an effect for patients with eczema. But I think the potential, you know, it goes across fields, whether it's cardiac or orthopedic, dermatology, veterinary science, and even, you know, coming back to aesthetics, there's a lot of IND indications for biostimulation, whether it's a filler-based type product or injectables. You know, we haven't talked about hair. That's a huge, huge market, injectables for hair growth, hair restoration, to be used in combination with hair transplants or independently. So I think, you know, kind of thinking about sources or utilization in dermatology, we can kind of talk about it phasing out or replacing PRP potentially, you know, especially once these FDA INDs go through, we can kind of think about where this may even act as a or supersede the potential of PRP, which has so much donor variability. We're not able to, you know, accurately predict patient response. But here you can predict, you have a specific source there with the type of exosomes that you're getting and being able to give pet patients better responses. So I think it's very early still, and I'm so excited for this field to see where it's going to go in the next 5, 10 years, because it's going to continue to make its impact. And I think we're going to, you know, the regenerative medicine toolkit in general, we have stem cells, all these different things, but we're really shifting away from cell-based products and entering into this new market of acellular, cell-free exosome product.
But you mentioned some things there about injecting it. And so my question is, when do we start being able to inject it? Because I know that's part of right now, it's all topical. Is where are we in the pipeline of development of study to be able to say, yes, it's safe to be injected within a filler, you know, vehicle, or, you know, using it for hair? How far away are we from that indication?
Yeah, it's exciting now because we are in the preclinical phases, meaning that we've done some early studies, preclinical models, it's showing benefit, but we really need FDA IND and FDA studies to be approved prior to doing that. So the first step is to get the first phase one. So we're working on that, recruiting patients, getting the pilot achieved to ensure that it's safe. Because, you know, first and foremost, we want to make sure that within the regenerative medicine, hype versus hope, there's a lot of potential room for hazard. You know, regenerative medicine is also has meaning for growth factors or for potential to stimulate cancer growth. So you want to make sure if a patient has that predisposition, we're not inducing those kinds of things. So this is why safety is so important. And so once we get those early FDA studies established, then I think the next step is to be able to offer it, you know, once the approval comes through, to be able to offer it in that setting. But that's the hope. I think injectable could have a lot of promise too, but we may not need to wait for it, because we know that even the topical product from our studies with histology, we've seen that it's able to be delivered into the dermis and have that effect on collagen and elastin. So I think the potential is there right now with the topicals, and the injectable may boost some other things that are ongoing, but we really need the FDA to give us the green flag. I mean, it's going on around the world. So that's the other thing, is we may be a little behind while we wait for other countries. Like with Australia, we have the TGA, and then in Europe, we can also think about, you know, approval processes there. So it may be, we may see it in other countries to get ahead, and they may already be doing that, as you said, but you just want to be really careful about sourcing and all of that before signing up for one of those procedures.
Well, as I think about the long term, what comes next, because I think you're a regenerative medicine expert in general when it comes to skin health, not just in exosomes, but, you know, if you're looking down your 5-year pipeline, what are the things that we should be thinking about even now? Because we weren't ready for exosomes. I don't think we were quite ready for it when it showed up. We didn't know enough. We didn't have enough of the science sort of in our back pocket to understand. We know so much about filler, and, you know, if it's HA or toxin, we are your, you know, we're your people. But I think this was a much more complex topic. So as we're looking at our books to study for the next big thing coming, what are those things that you're looking at now, if you can even share them? I don't know about an NDA, but that are the next big hot things around skincare and regeneration.
Yeah, and I'll keep it very generic and allude to a point that you made earlier about donor sourcing. And I think we're very early, even in exosome technology and production, and looking at one or two donors, or, you know, with the plated product, they looked at pooled donors, which is great. But I think optimizing donor sourcing is going to be huge, and it's probably the next area that we see. So whether it's multiple donors for MSC lines that are coming together, or plated products utilizing, you know, platelets from young, healthy individuals or donors that are more optimal, if you will, for a primed exosome population. So there's a lot of potential there for donor optimization. And then the next step is also to kind of think about priming the skin, which I alluded to earlier, where we can look at senescence, cellular senescence. We have these cells in our skin that age, and they kind of go into the zombie state, and they start secreting factors. They're like the bad apples. So one or two rotten apples can spoil the cart, right? So it's the same concept when you're using biostimulators, whether it's a Sculptra, you're using bioregenerative products like exosomes. You can add all the ingredients that you want, but if the oven isn't working, you're not going to get the cake that you want, you know? So it's the idea that we have to make sure that the environment ready to accept all these regenerative products that we're going to throw at our, you know, patients to say, you know, this is great, but how do we prepare their fibroblasts? How do we get their skin to be optimized and ready? And I think this is where you're going to look at and see the next phase is going to be by targeting senescence. We do a lot of cell senescence work in our lab to better understand what it is. How do we characterize it in the skin? How do we look at aging skin? We're actually 3D bioprinting skin in the lab. So we have a bioprinter that can print different layers, and we're adding different percents or concentrations of senescent cells in there. We want to create an aging skin model so that we can have what a 30-year-old skin would look like, a 50-year-old skin, and an 80-year-old skin. And that way we can now go back and see if we can screen products to see what are the agents that are going to clear those senescents, or going to make them more optimal. So when we do have products to deliver, like exosomes or the next biggest trend, your cell state or your biological clock is going to be ready to accept that.
Yeah, imagine as a medical spa being able to treat, you know, like atopic dermatitis, you know, acne, all these other conditions that we typically say go to your dermatologist. and having something that actually works that we know works. I feel like biologics are popping up everywhere. These companies, pharma companies who have biologics, and it's this big pharmaceutical thing, and, you know, as it always is. And this just seems so much more, I don't know, the word's not simple, but easier to understand for me than like pharmaceutical products and, you know, synthetic things. And it just makes sense, I guess you'd say. But I feel like this potential is incredibly, I mean, it's the runway is very, very long. And I think it's only getting started. You know, if you look at the next 1 to 2 years, do you think that we'll get anything through the FDA that's currently in study? Are we still far, 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 far away, as we typically are, the FDA, from getting anything new?
I think we're definitely going to, we're obviously for wound healing, we're already well underway for exosome application for wound healing. We are diversifying the different types of regenerative applications. I think in particular for aesthetics, we're going to hopefully over the next 2 to 3 years, again, I can't predict if everything works well and, you know, what the FDA wants to see and if we can hit all the milestones. But if I were to predict, I would say in the next 2 to 3 years, if all goes to plan, we should have an available injectable biopotentiated exosome hydrogel that's available for use. So I think that'll be very, very cool.
That will be groundbreaking. And I am excited to see it. Can't wait for it. But, you know, kind of as we wrap up here, as you think about when you started this in 2016 to 2017, did you sit there and ever think that you'd be here, that this would be this like still a quite novel concept in many specialties, you know, things on the shelf in a dermatology office, medical spas, but also doing things with, you know, hearts and wounds and all the different parts there, that it would have so many implications or so many uses. And, you know, here we are on a podcast talking about aesthetics and filler and Botox with this incredible science. Did that ever occur to you then? And if it did, like, what's that pathway look like for you, you know, as you started from 2016 until now?
So I think we had a sense for the potential, but we didn't really have an appreciation for the ramifications of that potential, I guess is the best way to put it. And I don't think we realized all that was possible until the team was assembled at Rion and, you know, all the unique individuals that have now really put all of their expertise in on the manufacturing side, on the regulatory side, on the quality side, on the research side, to take a discovery at Mayo and now really create an actual clinical grade technology that we're doing trials with. And now that we have that in our hands and we see what it can do and how we can make it and scale it, all of these new ideas start to emerge, right? You know, until you truly, I mean, and when it's an idea, you're excited just to get that idea done. But now that that idea has been fulfilled, really, I think this next few years will allow us to look at what the ramifications of the discovery actually are.
Well, you're definitely a pioneer, no doubt about it. Innovation, you know, pioneering this whole new area of medicine, especially for aesthetics. And I think what you mentioned about injectables and what's to come and how it can really change how we think about patient outcomes, patient health. I think the whole communication thing about isolating what it's going to say and synthetic messaging is just, again, mind-boggling. Very interesting for me, I'm sure for our listeners as well. But, you know, I hope that I hope it all works expediently for you and very quickly, because we want to get it here in our industry, like ASAP. I'll be your first guinea pig, guys. You know, I'm all for it. I'll sit in the chair, no problem. But, you know, thank you for coming on today and giving us an idea. We've learned a lot about the kind of the science of it and the manufacturing of it from Dr. Wiles, and to hear really the backstory and also where it's going to go in the future of it. I think it puts a perfect bow on this episode of all things exosomes. So let us know, even for you, just as a regular person, what's next for you from a cardiology standpoint, from a research standpoint, what's your next big milestone?
I think, you know, where we're very excited about really our focus on how do we treat, you know, patients with diabetic wounds and a lack of blood flow to their limbs. I think that's where we're starting. You know, as a cardiovascular sort of investigator, that's where one of the biggest needs in America is. You know, 1.3 million patients with non-healing wounds. An amputation occurs every 2 minutes in America. So if we can blunt that big healthcare crisis in any way using these newer technologies. And that'd be very exciting. And then we will inch our way to the heart. You know, we'll start there and then we're going to inch our way to the heart and see if we can help patients with ischemic heart failure.
So I like to bring things back to business here for the record. And so for me, business-wise, this is a no-brainer because we look at patients who are in their 80s who want to be part of the med spa world, the dermatology world, the plastic surgery world, and they've aged out in many ways. They've aged out because we know whether it's because of skin elasticity or collagen production from like a biostimulator, they just aren't going to respond as well. And so you as a practice are thinking, gosh, if I do it and they're not happy, you know, what kind of can of worms does that open? This gives you an avenue. This gives you a revenue source for that patient and also a way to make them happy, surprised, delight, satisfied because they're getting a great result. So if you're a practice looking at that saying, I'm in, for instance, South Florida, you know, everyone in South Florida, they're like little snowbird ladies who are all in their 80s. This is a true clinical option for you if you can't do anything more with injectables and you can't do anything more with even, you know, a laser and they're coming in to get their facials once a month, you know, to get pampered and such. This is like an actual opportunity for you business-wise to also have another product to sell into a patient to make them happy and have great results. So my business folks, listen up. This is a good option for you as well. Well, we've covered a lot of things on exosomes today. I feel like I know far more than I did when we started. And I think just to wrap up, guys, we mentioned looking at, you know, as your rep comes into the office, the sourcing, is it effective? What is the potency, if you will, or the amount of exosomes in a given batch? But more so, are they working? Are they effective exosomes? We talked about some donors. If we want to do a single donor, we want to do pooled donors, the differences in stem cells and exosomes, as well as PRP, PRF. So a lot of things there. If you're going to give us just some lasting thoughts that we walk away with from this whole lesson, what are the things that we just, you know, the top one, two, three things we have to know as we go into our exosomes, into the buying of them, but also using them in our clinic?
I think you've covered it, Tiffany. And I think we've talked a lot about, you know, the idea of sourcing, et cetera. But I would just say, try it and see what you think yourself, you know, and the best gauge of that is to give yourself a 2-3 month period, you know, because that's how long we're seeing these products take effect. We know the skin turns over every month, so you can see its effect right away within 30 days. So you have your trusted true patients, which who are going to give you great feedback. So I would say try it in those patients individually as a product by itself, or try it in combinations with your favorite procedures, either as a primer or a post-procedure or both. And I think that's when you really get to learn about the product and get to know. So if you're kind of on the fence, I would say even try multiple products and see what works for you. Some exosome products are in office only versus others are off the shelf and being able to have the accessibility to patients. So it really depends on, you know, your preference and the results that you're going to see in your hands too. So I think a lot of that comes down to talking to your sales reps and getting that next product in to decide which one's the right one for you. But I think this is an evolving field. It's a great growing field. I would just say my last words would be to remain cautiously optimistic, because I think there's a lot of different ways that we can go from here. And I think the future is bright for regenerative aesthetics. But, you know, remain cautiously optimistic, asking the right questions, the tough questions, and so that we are doing the right things for our patients and consumers.
Yeah, I think if you guys are to kind of circle the wagons there, we've been talking about specifically today, Plated Skin Science is a brand that we've been discussing. Dr. Wiles was the clinical investigator, the PI on that study, and doing more for them here. So we have more things coming from her. So make sure that you check her out. If you just Google her online, you'll see her research coming up and all the things she's been doing, and keep tabs on that. Because I think as things happen in the industry and they come out and you're publishing, it's interesting to stay on the forefront of it if you're a clinic, to know what's coming up next, to be the first person to have it in your market. Reach out to your sales rep and get the first thing, get it first and try it out. But there's an amazing line that already exists today that we know of that, you know, certainly go take advantage of it, get some in your practice, try it out. I think seeing is believing. So to your point, if I try it myself and it works, and I think I feel good about my patients trying it next. So yeah, this is the wave, guys. This is where it's all going. It's all going to exosomes, to the future of regenerative medicine. So get on board with it, because it's not going anywhere except for forward and future. But thank you for coming on today. You are fascinating. All the things that you know are just, again, I'm fascinated with it. And I will keep up with you for sure and see all the great things that you're going to do next. So we're holding our fingers, crossing our fingers for the next studies and for the FDA to say yes to all the things that you're applying to do, so we can see where we can go next with exosomes. So thanks for coming on today.
Thanks, Tiffany. Great to be here.
Thank you so much for having me. Really appreciate it.
You're welcome. Bye, guys. Thanks for listening to another episode of For the Record. This podcast is not intended to provide legal or medical advice. It's for entertainment, education, and information purposes only. For more information on this week's guest or to get started with Aesthetic Record, email us at info@aestheticrecord.com. Be sure to tune in next week for more fresh perspectives on disrupting the status quo and surviving in the aesthetics industry.